Iowa Contemporary Art presents
Icon Art Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Teeple with Donna Colby and Alan Cobb, and this is Icon Art Radio. Today's subject is process versus product. As a teacher of art, what I say is that art is about experience. And the artwork itself is one's commentary on their experience. And success in the process is depth of experience and truthfulness in the commentary. So this is a continuum of progress towards mastery of performance.
That sounds really formal.
I just said the word. I can't say.
That's all right. I'll take that out. Ladies and gentlemen, right. We'll be cleaning this up in post. What you're hearing now has been cleaned up in post.
We can pause momentarily if you want to start over again, or we can continue.
Well, I think we should continue with some energy and laughter.
You'll have more editing work.
Let's see if we can just be silly here and continue the conversation.
You're listening to the process of creating a radio show without any concern about the finished product, essentially.
Except for certain Federal Communications Commission compliance issues.
Well, I had a plan, but it sort of has gone out the window.
Well, I have something I can say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Start out with. Because I knew this was going to be our topic today, I decided last night to try doing a painting. I mean, I always try to be more in the process than thinking about the product anyway. But I was having a conversation with Sandy Wilson on Saturday, and we were talking about whether that was possible anyway. If you've had art training, can you really separate process from product, or aren't you just always kind of aware of it subliminally whenever you're working? And so I just thought, all right, last night I sat down with my paints and blank paper and thought, I'm just going to try to paint entirely in the process without thinking about the product at all. And I cut up a brochure I'd gotten in the mail that had some interesting graphics, and I started out just kind of putting them on the page in a random design and picking up a color that generated and kind of kept on going, and was so into it that I didn't even want to stop and stayed up way too late painting this. But I think it worked. At least it very closely worked to being entirely in the process. And what I felt looking at it afterwards was that I actually didn't care if anybody liked it or not, because it felt so successful in expressing the layering of what I'd been feeling at the time that I was painting it. And if I had been thinking about the product, I would have stopped much earlier, because early on in the work, it reached a point where I felt like visually, this is good. Mm-hmm. But I didn't actually want to stop. I wanted to say more, do more. Yeah. I was feeling more at the time, and so I allowed myself to keep on going, and I'm still working on it. It's not finished yet, because I'm finding that I'm not a minimalist at all, and I think what I've wanted to do all along with my art is to keep going, mm-hmm. like I did last night. That's part of my process.
Well, I find in my composition that if I stop when I know it's presentable, that often is not when I'm done. Like in this case with your collage. And if I continue, sometimes it becomes unpresentable, but I have finished a process. And the next time I do that process, I'll do it differently, and I'll have a different vision of where it goes and a different vision of how far to take it. So I think that the problem is just in, you know, creating these boundaries for ourselves, that because we feel that the work I'm working on now is somehow more important than the work that it might be preparation for. And in fact, each work is preparation for the next work. Right. And you don't know when the work that's any good will come out. And, you know, as my friend Andy Potok was told by Marc Chagall, you know, you're the artist. You don't get to decide whether it's any good. People who come to the gallery will decide that, and you have no say in the matter. So you can't judge your own work. You know, all you can judge is technique. So if you perfect your technique, then, you know, what you have to say may or may not be, you know, worth hearing or seeing.
Well, judging is not what it's about. People right. will judge it, for
right,
sure.
Right, of course, of
but
course.
But you are a process. You aren't snapshots.
Right.
Now, artworks are snapshots of your process.
Exactly. Yep.
And they capture a certain moment. Now, one moment, I mean, 5 minutes after the snapshot is taken or the piece was put in the framed and put in the gallery, you may have made that next step where you feel like, wow, it's more completed. And yet that's not going in the gallery or going on the yeah. film. There's a certain obligation of presentation that you felt when you thought, oh, this is packaged. This feels packaged right for the public. Mm-hmm. And the public will often demand something that's packaged. They actually almost, for some reason, this is something to talk about, prefer it to be packaged properly than to know what you really have to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, last week's broadcast was an example of my kind of deliberately breaking the package. Someone may have noticed that there were crickets chirping while we were talking in the beginning part of the program, and then partway through the crickets became a gurgling brook that was flowing past where we were talking, and then towards the end the brook more or less gave way to blowing leaves and distant railroad trains and things, all of which are natural sounds in Fairfield, so they might have been coming from the radio or they might not have been. But then I didn't end the program. When I finished the recording, I just stopped. We stopped talking, and I turned up the leaves blowing, and it ended. And that is a violation of, you know, the cues that we need when we're in the radio program box. And I just kind of felt mischievous about, you know, damaging the box for a change.
Well, and your mischief worked because I listened to it on the air to see how we did, you know, and I could barely even concentrate on what we were saying because I kept thinking, where was that water coming from? It wasn't raining that day, was it? Was the water running in the other room? I didn't notice it if it was.
I took my attention completely to the sound effects. Content of the program, I don't know. But I knew I was taking a chance. I knew I was breaking a rule or two. I knew I was playing fast and loose with the efforts that you and Bill had made to, you know, sound intelligent for a half an hour with me. And that just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. And there's no telling what will happen to this show before it actually gets in the can.
Uh-oh.
Especially given the beginning.
Especially when we're launching the concept of process.
Yes.
Well, also, I'm a staunch supporter of playfulness in art anyway. Just people like Calder, and, you know, there's some wonderful, to me, inspiring examples of people who were more concerned with playing in that way and experimenting than producing something impressive. And I think that's really important.
Well, you know, when we first started this particular broadcast, you know, Bill made a kind of a formal statement of the idea that we wanted to discuss. And that statement was so well packaged that when he finished it, it was over. And none of us had anything to say. We all just sat here in silence and realized we had to start recording all over again. And that's the thing. When you're thinking about the package, you're not thinking about the contents. And if you're thinking about both, you're really not. You're hopping back and forth between them, which, you know, is chopping up your continuity badly.
No, it's a very significant thing. See, what happened is that I had conceptualized in my mind a package that was the right kind of thing to get things going. Sounded just right.
Yeah.
Only when I got that far with it, and it wasn't any longer fresh as I had heard it in my mind earlier.
Right.
It was definitely a package.
Yeah, it's
and
the difference
I, and
between
I was
fresh
like
garden
nonplussed
days
all of a sudden. This was not a living thing. This was a dead package. Although the content was significant, I would love to have kept going in that way.
Sure.
But I find this more interesting because now we have a way of juxtaposing the two things.
Right. We're talking about process and we're playing with the process while we're talking about
That's
it.
Right.
Self-referral strikes again.
Well, you mentioned the word mischief before, too, and which is a little bit of a amplification of playfulness, I think. And some of the movies that we see on the film night at Cafe Paradiso every other Thursday, I'm always intrigued by the artists that are like very considered very distinguished artists in the art world and by the critics and everything, but who essentially are very mischievous in their orientation to their work. And they get away with it. In fact, people love them for their mischief.
Yeah.
So I wish I were a little bit more daring in that way. I don't think I'm daring enough I'm too concerned with not appearing as a batty old lady that I don't let myself be as mischievous as I really would like to be, I think.
Yeah. Well, of course, mischief fits better with certain directions in an artistic statement than it does with other directions. Mm. There are certain kind of sublime elements you might be trying to express that a little bit of mischief would just obliterate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very important what the intention of the individual is in their life. Their life direction, and how they're expressing it through their art. I think it can stop a person being able to express themselves fully. What they'd really like to get across, they stop because of this thing that we've been discussing. They decide that they have to package it a certain way to get it out there. I don't know what the secret is here, because you have to respect the structure somewhat. I mean, just creating Icon. I mean, Icon was created, Gallery 51 East was created to establish a venue that looked like a real gallery. And it gave me a voice. And after 5 years of establishing a reputation in the region, we're in a position that we can actually sit here and talk like this and people could take us serious.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would be at the cafes talking like this and what do you do with it, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that for me, the key is in constantly reminding myself that the work I'm working on right now is, in fact, a dry run for the work I'm going to do next. And I may never do the work that I think I'm going to do next, because the dry run may get to the goal, or the dry run may turn into a dead end, and there's no point in taking another shot at it in that direction. But you know, when I was developing software, I always, you know, maintained that the only way to design a new program properly was to design it, implement it, do the whole thing, use it, and then do it again. Because the first time you're learning what the issues are, and the second time you're able to plan. You can't really plan the thing out unless it's something you've done over and over again, in which case you've already done what I'm talking about in effect. But in art, where it's just an ongoing thing and you'll never reach the goal and it'll always be evolving and changing, it's just a terrible inhibition to think that what you're currently doing has to be any good. If you think it has to be any good, you've just lopped off 75% of your own spontaneity, and I think that's synonymous with creativity.
It's not a linear thing either. You know, the dry run thing, you may think it's a dry run, but actually it's going to zigzag off in a completely unexpected direction because of some little tiny feature of it. And but I want to backtrack for a second, because something Bill said made me think of another. I talked about the mischief element before, but there's also the kind of courage that it takes to maybe be more mainstream than is popular. you know, there's a whole cult of originality in the art world, and some people, like Elizabeth Payton, for example, is a good person to mention here. She loved doing portraits, and everybody told her, you can't make it in the art world doing portraits because you have to do something more original than that. Mm-hmm. And she has made it in the art world doing portraits because that's what she loved, and she stuck with what she loved. And I think that's an important part of it, too, that you really have to be in love with what you're exploring.
Well, I think that's the bottom line. That's the whole story. And if you step outside of your, exuberant, effusing about what you love, then you're off, because that's what art's all about. That's what action should be all about. Yeah.
And she has so much energy in those portraits, or like Jim Wydell's Leaves on the Ground. And there's a lot of examples of art where the subject matter has been done for centuries, but somebody comes along. And Picasso said, you can't help but being original. You can even try making an exact copy of somebody else's painting, and your own originality will be there in your expression of it.
Right. Just ask any forger.
But I think we all kind of sense this, but this discussion always comes up in the context of artists struggling to make a living and put a roof over their head and buy food and put their kids through school and all of this. How do we balance this need to make a living? Because this is where people compromise over this, what we've talked about last week, the inner necessity thing. It's hard to not think of product or how it's going to sell or how you're going to make a living. And yet I know, I'm the man in town that really believes that you have to stay on your process and stay with what you love. And yet everybody's always coming up to me, and you just see the desire and the need from them to make it work financially. And I always say, well, don't put the cart before the horse. You have to stay on process. What do you guys think about this?
Why aren't there more go-betweens? I mean, because I think that's the key, is to have people who love art and fall in love with somebody's work and who like to promote it, and who like to find a market for something somebody has created out of just their love and their process. It seems to me there's probably a market for just about any kind of art somewhere. But the artists don't tend to be the people who like to do the promotion and find those markets. So,
yeah, I mean, you need to wear a different brain when you're doing marketing, and most of us are stuck with only one brain, or one that can shift gears only slowly. So I think you have to disregard the marketing. I know
as an artist.
Yeah, as an artist. Right. Last year or the year before, we had a discussion about this at the Fairfield Library. I think maybe it was the diversity conference, and there were some people there with a business background who were saying, well, we really got to teach the Fairfield artists more about how to market their product. And the thing is, that's not how it works. You could know everything there is in the world about how to market a product, and yours in particular, and it might happen to be a product that no one buys. And you can't say that people are not buying it just because you don't know how to market it. They may be not buying it just because they don't like it. And I suppose at the extreme of marketing, we can say that there's always a way to convince people to buy things against their will, but that's not what we're really talking about. And so, I spent a lot of time with one of Fairfield's most playful artists, trying to make it as marketable as possible in terms of getting photographs of it and putting it up on the internet and making it available and making it easy to click a PayPal button and purchase a print. We talked it up and we did a little bit of PR, and there was absolutely zero response. And the question came, is it really worth it for this artist to spend any more time not being an artist? Or is it better to just get back to being an artist and accept the fact that you'll have to have a day job? Hmm. And it may be that, you know, this particular artist will continue with, you know, day jobs for the next 10 years, and all of a sudden someone will see what works about that body of work, and they'll start marketing it with success, or some gallery will pick it up, or whatever.
Yeah,
but you can't plan those things. It's like, right, should I, as a writer, write a bestseller? Well, yeah, go ahead, be my guest, but how do you write a bestseller?
Right. Yeah, karma plays a big role.
Yeah.
You can't, two people could have, because I know the artist you're speaking of, I think the work is excellent. Mm-hmm. It's top. She just hasn't connected with her audience, and it's out there. I know it's out there.
Yeah, there's got to be.
But she's tried all these different ways and hasn't connected, so there's a karmic factor here that I think at one point she will connect.
Yes.
And she'll have an audience. But it's time for her to go back to just making art.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is what I advise everyone. I always say, don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
Because it'll guarantee, you should devote so much time to just making the money that's necessary to put food on the table and pay your rent. And then you have to devote a certain amount of time to satisfying your need as an artist to express and what it is that you're here to do as an artist.
Yeah.
And the more time you can spend there, fine. Is that your hand up, or is
I'm just wiggling my hand.
Okay, I'll just make another one more thing that you can make. every town, every city, every community where the arts flourished in history, there's been a perfect marriage between artists and patrons. And the one thing that I think we're lacking here, and I think this is what Alan was bringing up, is that, or you brought up, that we need more people helping to make it happen. And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And if we want the arts to flourish in Fairfield, then citizens of Fairfield have to recognize the role of patronage in arts flourishing. And everyone can collect art, even if they're buying a $10 a vase at the farmer's market or something, or if they can buy a $100 piece or a $1,000 piece of art, they're helping the arts to flourish in that town, or people giving incentives for artists to open shops and things like that.
Because then you actually are making your home a gallery. Like, I have done this for years, bought local art, and often from young artists that I just think are very, very promising and wonderful. And pretty much everybody who comes over to my apartment notices all of these pieces of art and wants to know who did it. And so I feel like I'm kind of helping promote the arts in Fairfield just by having these things hanging in my room. And one other thing that I thought of when you were talking before, too, about product is that sometimes it's a matter of just timing. Like Cézanne, for example, is one of the most in-process, not product, you know, product-oriented artists ever. And he still, at the end of his life, felt like he was a failure because he was so much into the exploration of what he was doing that he was never satisfied. And yet, you know, soon after his death, all of a sudden, everybody was calling him the father of all the rest of the modern artists. So I think, unfortunately, often the discovery of some breakthrough artist happens too late for them to enjoy the success of it.
Yeah,
but the joy is that his nourishment was from his work.
Yes.
And that's where artists get their fulfillment, is in the work, in the process.
Yeah. You get a variety of things from spending your time being creative. One of them, of course, is the joy of being creative. One of them is that if you're lucky, someone else will see the product of your creativity and will also like it. And then if you're even luckier, they'll tell you they liked it. And that can give you a lot of energy to go and do some more of it. And then sometimes if you're lucky in other ways, and it's a two-edged sword, someone will give you money for it. I've always believed that if you do whatever it is that you do as well as you can, that probably one way or another, for mystical reasons, your ability to continue doing it will be supported. And it might mean that someone gives you money. It might mean that someone asks you to house sit for a year. It might be, you know, that someone has a whole lot of materials that you need. Who knows? But to do it your best seems to be your best shot for getting maximum feedback from the environment for what you're doing. That sounded like an end.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
That sounds really formal.
I just said the word. I can't say.
That's all right. I'll take that out. Ladies and gentlemen, right. We'll be cleaning this up in post. What you're hearing now has been cleaned up in post.
We can pause momentarily if you want to start over again, or we can continue.
Well, I think we should continue with some energy and laughter.
You'll have more editing work.
Let's see if we can just be silly here and continue the conversation.
You're listening to the process of creating a radio show without any concern about the finished product.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.